two, and...
Do we do it at the same time?
Do we do it at the same time?
Oh, I don't know.
I do ours at the same time.
Does that... Oh, so you've got to be dead on the same time.
Well, we're music people, so three, two, and...
I felt like I smashed that.
Close. It was good. That'll do.
And that's the spirit of the podcast.
It'll be fine. That'll do.
The theme for the next 60 minutes. Also, I'm going to preposition this. Are you already absolutely fucking sweating?
I'm absolutely sweating my tits off. It is boiling in here.
It's so nice because we get to come in that huge, like, building, this place.
Oh, yeah. And then really this grand. Is like a sauna.
And as soon as people go, this is great, really good. As soon as you sit down in this chair, like, oh, I've got to do this for the next hour.
It's still. It's very still in here.
It's a nice moment when it ends and you peel yourself off the chair and you can hear the squelch happen.
Oh, God.
It'll happen. It will get you. Yeah. I'm glad that we've already discussed your sweat before I've even mentioned your name here.
Yeah. We should probably get on to that.
Well, you are... I'm going to say it, King of the Geeks.
I'll take that.
I think it's fair.
Yeah, I do.
I've seen reports call you the British Pete Davidson.
The only article that's been dedicated to me is TikTok's favourite geek and the British Pete Davidson.
But that's 100% of the articles about you, say it.
I don't know why. I don't know. I remember when I started out, people would be like, oh, you look like the rat from Flushed Away. Alex Turner in the early days of the Arctic Monkeys.
Before he got really fit. Nice.
Then Pete Davidson. And I always took that as, yeah, I'd look like Pete Davidson if he had a bath. And so I don't know where that's come from, in all honesty.
Sergio, I've been looking at you for the past like 10 minutes and I'm like, where are we? You've both got a nose.
We've known each other for years. And not once. Everybody I've known in person has never brought that up.
You have two legs. Yeah.
Man.
What do we?
White. I don't know.
For the people listening to this, obviously they've pieced it together and gone, oh, of course, it's Henry Calvert on the show. It must be.
Of course. Yes.
How are you feeling, my king?
I'm good. I'm feeling very good. And I think it's a very good time to be King, figurative King of the Geeks. We are living in a pretty good geeky era at the minute, so I'm doing well.
It's so good being a geek right now.
I completely agree. Yeah.
I want to start off with you first because you've gone from, you know, as I said, you are now King of the Geeks, but you used to sell carpets.
I did. I used to sell carpets and I used to teach drama.
Which I still could see you doing now. I smashed that.
I still kind of do. I do like odd bits of speaking in schools about careers in the arts and stuff like that, because I'm clearly the authority on the subject.
I mean, I never said King of the Arts, so I've never...
I used to sell carpets in my years out with the goal of eventually... Well, going to drama school, I sold carpets during the day and then taught in the evenings and did local amdram and stuff like that.
Exactly how Tom Hanks started.
Exactly.
Robert De Niro. It's a natural progression.
They had a family retail firm that sold flooring, of course.
I believe
they did.
The saying is from rugs to riches. He's
a comedian. He's quick, isn't he? It's almost like that's his shtick.
I'll cross that one off because I prepped that days ago.
And then, I started doing comic book recommendations on the old TikTok, and it just kind of went from there.
So what has been your biggest pinch me moment? Like, that happened.
Oh, gosh. There's been a couple recently that I don't think I can talk about. When does this go out?
We'll go out this week.
I can't talk about this yet. if you follow me in the next few weeks, you'll see some pinch me things. But I met some certain... puppeted characters, which is very exciting. Anyway, but aside from that, I think being invited to Disney World in Florida was great. Being able to take my uncle there was awesome because, like, he doesn't have kids. He'd never do that on his own, but he's the biggest nerd I know. And doing, like, Galaxy's Edge with him was just insane. Or taking, like, my grandma to the Avatar premiere. That was, like, that. Anything that I get to do with my family or the friends that I knew before all of this, those like full circle moments are the pinch me things. The Jeff Goldblum interview though, that's probably the thing.
That was literally my tongue. So I was like, you're the only person who doesn't fancy Jonathan Bailey, but he fancied you back. You're the only person that's happened to.
Me walking, I watch her back so many times. He gets up out of his seat, looks me up and down. Oh my God, hi. that's a great name. That's a great name. Damn right it is, Jay Bailey. Damn right it is. And then Jeff's there like, Dr. Calvert, yes, can we sing a little bit of Fred Astaire with me right now? Heaven, I'm in heaven. And then just the whole, yes, you've got a lovely voice, and you've got that long neck like a giraffe or a Modigliani painting. And I didn't know who Modigliani was. But there is a Modigliani painting of like a white guy with a quiff, and all power to Jeff Goldblum. He does have a very long neck and he does look a bit like me.
What was your reaction when he said that? Because again, you're in the presence of Jeff Goldblum. All you could do is go, of course.
I everything he did, I was just like, you are kind of like Willy Wonka and you're everything. Yes. You'll know this. He's your pal.
We get on.
But
refers to me as the Scream, though. When it comes to paintings, I'm the Scream. You're the I'm not as attractive. No,
But he is everything you could ever want Jeff Goldblum to be. I think you'd agree. Like he's not an actor, which is media trained version is at the forefront. He is just him. He walked through the corridor doing this, and then he see me and he went, oh, Dr. Calvert, do you know where my lunch is? Do you know where I'm meant to be going? I went, no. No.
I've used all my charm on our interview now. Fuck off. Yeah.
Not my problem anymore, pal.
I've got my four minutes.
Speak to organic.
I do love it. We went to... Did you ever see Chaos on Netflix?
I didn't, but I did see that because you took Alex.
Yeah, so it was on our honeymoon. We went to a dinner with Jeff Goldblum. And the whole time he was just spent talking to Alex about the winner. Yes, okay, the band. Oh, so were they like, sta-da-da-da, or were they, hoo-ta-ta-ta-ta, and all this shit. And I was just like, it's amazing to witness that he cares so much about our wedding and clearly nothing about the Netflix production that he's promoting there.
No, I don't care. Tell me about this. Yeah. Tell me about it. Ah, Henry Calvert got very drunk, I hear, at your wedding. And then I walked in. Story about Daniel's wedding. I got very, very drunk at Daniel's wedding. And I started staying in a hotel like 15 minutes away. Walk away. I thought I could walk that thing. And I did. But I walked into this foyer and you're like great aunts or something are there who I've said like hi to in passing.
Yeah.
And I was sat there like going to the rooms. I was like, now then, love, great do. Great do, would it? Great do. They hadn't a clue who the hell I was. They were like, it was fine. Yeah, Evening, look after yourself. Look after yourself, darling. You'll be fine. I woke up, I was like, oh, God. Oh, my God.
The worst bit is I can't piece it together because I don't have a great aunt. So I have no
idea. Oh, I don't know who these women were then.
That's it, literally.
These were, like, assorted women in their, like, 50s, 60s who...
Oh, God. I don't remember inviting anyone like that.
Maybe they actually weren't at your wedding and they genuinely were random.
You were the Jeff Goldblum in that situation walking through the corridor. They're like, yeah, okay, leave us alone. Yeah, it's okay, have a lovely evening. Yes, the champagne was great.
The band was great.
We said it's a great time to be a geek. What was the one panel in a comic or the one moment in a comic?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question.
Into it.
Issue one of Saga. So Saga... I wouldn't say that got me into being a geek, but that got me into comic books.
Right.
So Saga is published by Image. It's by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. If you haven't read Saga, it, to me, is the perfect example of why comic books work as a medium. You know, that story wouldn't work in any other medium. Mm. It just works in comics. And that's what made me fall in love with that kind of storytelling. I think, like, growing up, the panel or... The comic panel that I remember standing out to me... I think it's probably in Civil War when they've come out of the portal into like the raft, I think, and you've got the lineup with like every villain you can think of, every hero you can think of, and I remember thinking, oh my God, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. So either that or Saga, I think. When it comes to comic books, it's either one of those two.
God, you actually, because again, most people have just gone Spider-Man number one. Fuck it, your comics through and through.
I know. Well, yeah, I mean, I fell in love with comics very early on. Like, I remember a distinct memory in year 8. I remember I took a load of graphic novels with me on this, like, French Outward Bound trip that we went on. And Joseph Barker nicked my copy of Fear Itself, threw it across the room at Tom Hall, and, like, half of the pages fell out, and I cried.
How strong is this guy's arm to throw a book and...
To be fair, Joe Barker was like 6'4" at age 12. And like this kid was like I don't know where the hell he came from. He was like part Neanderthal. He was a big lad.
Start to see why he throws you stuff around the room now.
I wasn't best impressed with Joe Barker. And also, Joe Barker, I remember we went for a sleepover at his house when we were like 10. Actually, probably younger. We were like 9. And he goes, I've got a movie to show you. Two Towers comes on. Schmeagol terrified me. Like, honest, I could not hack it. And Joe Barker spent, and Oscar Butterill spent the whole night in his bedroom going, like doing the Gollum voice all night. I was like crying because I was so scared. My mum had to come and pick me up.
No.
My mum had to come and pick me up because I was just so scared that Gollum was going to come and creep into the room.
We have a lovely sofa. If you want to lay across that, we can just have this as a therapy session.
Screw you, Joe Barker. He's actually quite a nice guy now. I quite like Joe Barker.
I'm glad you actually jumped in it because Joe Barker was my next question.
And the next guest is fresh from his gap year in Thailand.
The Movie Dream Podcast. Oh, that wasn't great. Oh,
we have a giggle.
I wanna let you live your Pete Davidson best life here. I know you haven't dated Ariana Grande yet.
No.
You're not covered in tattoos, but I'm gonna give you the chance to do what Pete does and date a comic book character.
Okay.
Who are you picking? Who are you risking it all for?
I think the first one that came to mind was Dazzler.
Okay, great. Stunning.
Or if we're going with something that kind of falls into my usual type,
the Hulk.
I've got something to tell you here. No. Either Dazzler or... I think Jean Grey would be cool. I don't like the mind stuff though. I think if she could just like not telepath me while I'm around her, I'd quite like that.
Yeah, Dazzler's just fun vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Storm could be very cool.
Yeah, stunning.
Yeah. Essentially any of the X-Men. It just seems to be. I think the X-Men have some of the hottest comic book characters going.
Yeah, beggars don't be choosers. If we can have one of the X-Men, well,
I'll just take all of them.
Fucking Toad. Yeah, why not? I don't mind. It's still cool.
I think any of them. If we go in DC, maybe Black Canary.
I absolutely adore that I said, if you want to pick one, and you've listed off about 8 different women there.
Yeah. God, it's so hard, Daniel. You can't make me pick one.
Is this just in case any of them are just happen to be watching? Like, yeah. I knew I missed my chance.
Yeah, it's like I was a big Arrow fan growing up, and Laurel and Dina Lance I was more of a Laurel guy. Did you ever watch Arrow?
No, I never did.
Good for you, because it was pretty. Can you swear on this?
Oh, please do.
It was pretty wank. That's not even like it was pretty terrible. But Laurel Lance.
Again, now the room's got even hotter, yeah, my friend. Oh my god.
Still.
The lens is steamed up. It's horrible. But I want to talk about Superman.
Yes, I do.
Now, we've both seen it. I think it's been out for a week now, so I think we can get a bit into the spoilers.
Yeah.
What did you make of it?
I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
As a comic book fan, it was the most comic book feeling film I think I've ever seen, from like the structure and the shot composition, like everything just felt like a panel. And I loved the way that it had these three distinct cuts to black.
Yes.
Because initially I read that was supposed to be like day one, day two, day three, but to me I read that as issue one, issue two, issue
That's
three,
because cool.
it's got that structure of almost a monster of the week type thing for each issue. Each section feels quite distinct, and in a way that feels like a 3-issue run of a comic book.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love that.
I don't know if it's, because obviously you love your comics. I don't read that many comics. I enjoyed Superman.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, that's I don't think that's like James Gunn's best superhero film. I don't think it's like one of the
I don't either, to be fair.
But I sort of enjoyed it because I think I'm sort of seeing it more as, I don't know that much about Superman. I know a bit about Lex Luthor. I know crypto and all of that sort of stuff vaguely. But there were moments through it where I was a bit like, I feel like I've seen James Gunn do this before.
Yeah.
Like the moment where Mr. Terrific's like zapping people with the drones, I was like, oh, Rocket did that in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. There was a needle drop and drones were zapping people as we're watching them and that sort of thing. And there are a few moments where I was like, I didn't really care about a lot of people in it.
Yeah.
Like at the end when they're like, oh, he likes watching his parents or it helps him relax. And then they showed the moments of his parents on screen. I was like, I've seen them for 8 minutes. I could not care less about
these. I get that. That could have had a heavier impact.
Yeah.
And I think they're, as a film, it's definitely got, like, the pacing's not great. A lot of it is underdeveloped. But coming at it from, like, a launching pad, I think as a way to launch a new universe, I think it did it very well. And I think I'm excited to see where it goes. I kind of like the fact that superheroes are a common thing here.
Yeah.
People aren't losing their mind over the fact that Superman's landed next to them. Like, they're kind of used to it. It's an interesting world to see stories happen in. And I really like the dynamic between Lois and Supes. I wish we got more of Clark and Lois.
Yes, yeah.
Because the scenes between, there's a great scene about maybe 15 minutes in, like the interview sequence.
Yeah.
Brilliant scene.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice to have a little bit more of that and maybe a little bit less of the otherworldly, other unit pocket universe thing. I thought we were in there a little bit too long.
And that's when it also gets quite dark and grey and a lot of like shadows. And that's when I'm like, no, James, you're not that guy. Don't make the Superman the dark cinema screen. Yeah. You're the colourful, vibrant. And you're right. I think when we was in there for a long period, it felt a bit, long.
It just felt a bit laborious. I thought like okay, we're padding this out a bit, right? We need a middle act. Let's like and then stick Lois with Mr. Terrific for a while, which I really liked Mr. Terrific. I thought he was really funny, and I like Guy Gardner as well. But I'm like a massive Green Lantern fan, so seeing like a good Green Lantern on screen just hit all the right places.
So I wanted to ask that, because I love Nathan Fillion and everything he does, and his character I absolutely loved, making me laugh, everything he does.
Yeah.
And I want, so again, I don't know that much about the comics. Is that who he should be?
Yeah, Guy Gardner is a dick. Guy Gardner on the surface is like a knobhead, but underneath there is so much kind of like trauma in Guy's story in his past, and he, there's so many places they can go with this character, and I'm really excited to see him in Lanterns, the upcoming show. And I think that's going to be a really interesting dynamic, because Jon Stewart, they, in my head, Jon Stewart should be the oldest of the four main Earth Green Lanterns, but he's actually a lot younger than Hal, and Hal's like in his 50s.
So Jon Stewart, that's Aaron Pierre.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
and Hal Jordan's Kyle
Chandler,
something like that. Yeah,
but he's always spelt with a question mark at the end of it, so we pronounce right.
But he's an aged up Hal, and I think it's going to be. I'm just very, very excited for that Lantern show.
Yeah,
which is what I mean. Like, I'm just excited to see more stories in this world.
Yeah, and I think what James Gunn has done with every comic book film he's touched, like, I absolutely, a Peacemaker for me. I sort of went into it going, because Suicide Squad, I think, is one of my favourite comic book movies, full stop.
Really?
Yeah, I love it.
See, I only watched it when it came out, and then rewatched it 2 weeks ago or something.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten how good that film was. It really, really strong film.
Like, striking. The moment where they're walking through the rain, I'm like, this is such a beautiful
shot.
That's
so cool.
And I, again, what I love is just these like balls to the wall. Like, yeah, I'm going to include Weasel. I'm going to include Polka Dot Man. I fucking love that for him. But So Peacemaker, I sort of went into it going, I've seen John Cena do this. Is that the joke done, that he will do anything for peace? Peacemaker, I think, is such an incredible show.
I haven't seen it. No. I haven't seen Creature Commandos either, which I hear is really good as well.
I sort of enjoyed it. Basically, every episode, they set up like their backstory as to why they're now in this squadron. And obviously, everyone is like an emotional backstory. But then it sort of loses the pacing of the current story.
Okay, loses a bit of cohesion, I guess.
Yes, yeah. You're sort of following something, and then for half of the episode, you're finding out, oh, why has Weasel been put into the Creature Commandos? Why has everyone been put into the Bride, GI Robot? So, and you just sort of like, oh no, now we've got 10 minutes of backstory, and you know, obviously you have to do that because you have to understand why they're all here. But for me, it's one of the weaker parts of what he does, but it's still good.
Yeah.
Like, that's how, like, I mean, in James Gunn, we trust at this point,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the best. He is the best.
He is great. He is very, very good. And I do find it exciting that he is, like, essentially the Kevin Feige of the DC
yeah. view.
And I love the fact that he's working quite closely with Jim Lee. I think it's a very good time to be a DC fan.
So what are you hoping James brings to the DC universe? Now, are there any, like, standout characters that you're like, this will never make the screen, but I, my God, if anyone can, James can.
The first one that comes to mind is Laughlees.
Who is that?
So Laughlees is the Orange Lantern. There's only one, and there's like 8 different Lantern Corps. Each have a different color and a part of the emotional spectrum. Yeah. And Laughlees is greed. And Laughlees just wants everything, and he's like this really maniacal looking like dog ape thing. And I'd like to see him. But if we're talking who James Gunn might bring in, I can see James Gunn bringing in the likes of like Batmite, Mr. Mixtle Plix, whatever, how the hell you say it, Atrocitus's cat, like I said, I could rattle off like loads of lantern people. Yeah. But I'm more intrigued to see what he does with the more grounded street level stuff.
Right.
Because I think the more outlandish, astral, you know, out there stuff, we kind of expect him to do. And I have no doubt that he'll do it really well. You know, yeah. Like any of the assorted, like Calendar Man and Kite Man and like all of that. But the Batman stuff... And the, you know, the Nightwing, the Jason Todd stuff, like are they going to do that?
Yeah.
Do I trust James Gunn with that darker stuff? Or do I just want them to kind of hint that it's probably Matt Reeves's and just keep it completely separate?
Oh, really? Okay.
I wouldn't mind a world where the only hint at Batman being part of the DCU is that, like, on a newspaper... the bat signal's the same as Pattinson's. And it's just, I'd be okay with that. Because I quite like Pattinson. I quite like this universe. But you can keep them separate.
I think that's the problem, is that, I mean, again, Matt Reeves' Batman is such a good film.
Yeah.
We can't introduce Batman into this universe for a long time now, because people are already confused going, I thought bloody Christian Bale was Batman. He hasn't been Batman for bloody donkeys. Yeah, yeah. And people are still confused about that. So to have two consecutive ones on the go, although Batman was introduced in Creature Commandos, didn't say anything.
Oh,
you
really?
You just see a figure of him. He like takes out Rupert Thorne. So you see him. So obviously, and James has this thing where he's like, if you're in the animated series, you play that character throughout. You play him in live action.
Oh, really? Right. Okay. Yeah. So he's Frank Grillo's.
Rick Flag Senior. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So he's Rick Flag in everything. And so. He must know who he wants to be as Batman if he's introduced him.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it gets really messy. Because, again, we've got the Batman 2 coming out with Matt Reeves.
Mm.
And now we've got this Batman going on. There were moments even in Superman where I was like, this comedy feels a bit weirdly out of place for Superman at times.
Yeah.
And you cannot do Batman being like, he's behind me, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't work. So that's what I mean in, do I trust James Gunn at the helm of those stories?
Yeah.
Whether he relinquishes some level of... I mean, of course, he won't be directing them. I know there was rumours about Andy Muschietti, who did the Flash and the It films, directing Brave and the Bold. But yeah. I think that's been scrapped since. Which is great, because I did not like the Flash, so...
I don't think a lot of people did.
No.
Hot take.
No, I know. I always find it hilarious going back and watching certain content creators' initial reactions to that film.
We've all done it, my friends.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, we're so back. Next announcement. We are scrapping everything to do with this universe. It flops. It's terrible.
Believe me, I did the exact same. When Black Adam came out, and I was like, I'm getting on that fucking poster.
When Multiverse of Madness came out, it was my first PR event I ever did. And they took me to Milan. I came out of that, I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
This is the best thing ever. Believe me. Like, if you have a favorite content creator and they post an initial reaction straight out of a premiere, give them a week and answer, ask them their opinion again. Because and to be fair, I'm not taking this away from content creators. I've been guilty of it. But you go to a big screening, mm-hmm. a multimedia thing. I've just seen 10 of my friends that I haven't seen for a month.
It's free drinks, it's food.
It's like it is the best atmosphere to go and watch one of those new releases in. Mm. It's a wonderful atmosphere. It's a great atmosphere to go and watch a piece of crap too. Like, because
we've done it.
Yeah. You have a few drinks, you'll have a laugh with your friends either way. So when you're coming at it, I guess we're in fortunate positions where we're not critics.
Yes.
Realistically. Yeah. You know, really. But when we're giving our opinions, there does need to be a little caveat of, have I gone in with rose-tinted glasses here?
Yeah. It's not even a case to take it with a pinch of salt. It's like, get the whole salt shaker and pour it into your face.
Yeah. That's exactly how it goes. But, that's just a little PSA from Henry Cavill.
I watched The Rise of Skywalker at the world premiere in
LA. Oh, mate. That's so cool. Even though it's terrible. That's awesome.
That's it. I watched it in the room, in the Dolby Theatre, where they do the Oscars. Spielberg was there, Spike Lee, like Jimmy Kimmel was sat like three rows behind me. I was like, this is nuts. And I remember thinking, this is the best cinematic experience anyone will ever have. There will not be a better film than this. And then I watched it like a few days back at Multimedia here when I got back in London. I was like, what were they pumping into that room?
Yeah.
Like, I remember just leaving that whole thing. Like, there will never be a better Star Wars than that ever. And yeah, and you're so right. Yeah. You watch it on
your iPad 6 months later.
when you're going through a breakup.
Yeah. No, you get quite cynical about it. When I saw Rise of Skywalker, it was the first... Did Rise of Skywalker come out after Endgame or before Endgame?
I believe it was after.
Okay, so it was my second midnight screening I'd ever done.
Yeah.
It was with like my oldest Star Wars friends who, you know, we spent every break together listing Jedi and naming planets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Went to a midnight screening, we got special badges, and like, to be fair, the screen was actually quite dead, which should have been an immediate indicator. To be fair, it was in like Northallerton in rural North Yorkshire.
So they'd got 12 seats in, yeah.
But I distinctly remember coming out of that, and even we were like, that was cool, but that was crap. Like,
we're so tired.
Yeah. It's 3 a.m. We still need to get home. I'm disappointed. But even Last Jedi, I remember watching Last Jedi for the first time, and it was the first time I'd ever watched a film in the cinema that had left me utterly confused.
Right.
It wasn't like, that's bad, that's good. I came out, and my mum still says this, we came out of the city screen in York, and I didn't speak for about an hour. I just went, I need a minute.
Your fun at parties.
And I literally wrote like 10 pages worth in my notebook about this film.
Wow.
And my rating, I just went, I don't know.
Perfect.
Sums up The Last Jedi pretty perfectly, I think.
I wish Rotten Tomatoes used your scale as well. Yeah. Shrug emoji.
It's up to you. You decide. I don't care.
I like going to these with Alex, my wife, as well, because I take her, she's like, oh, thank you for taking me. And she'll always try and find the positive in a film as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we watched Death of a Unicorn. She obviously did not enjoy it at all. She was like, oh, Paul Rudd's a great guy, isn't he?
He seems like a nice man.
Yeah. Not even his character, just him as a general person is a nice guy. Oh, dear. Oh, did we just hold deer in sync? We didn't manage to do the clapping sync, but we got the old deer. We finally
we'll use that to sync up the audio in the video.
I have to watch you 25 minutes to start the edit. Who would you love to cast as a Batman in the DC universe?
Oh, crikey Moses.
I don't know if he's up for doing it.
No, someone tells me he might not. Now, Ramesses on the other note. Hang on, that's quite funny because Christian Bale did play Moses.
Shut up, that's genius.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally is called Christian.
And he played Moses in Exodus, Gods and Kings, which
is a
Ridley
Scott. Welcome to the Bible dweeb.
Yeah, so we've had a complete rebrand.
Tell me about John 2:12.
Batman. I have seen people say Jensen Ackles would be cool.
Yeah.
I quite like the sound of that bloke who played the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle and played Reacher, the big lad, properly large man. he plays Reacher, but he's massive. And I like, as much as I don't like Batfleck, I like a chunky Batman.
Really? Okay, but what about a chunky Bruce then? Because then that's when I get thrown out. I imagine him sort of like fit but suave.
Like Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Christian Bale kind of has set the precedent of this kind of suave Bruce. To be fair, Michael Keaton kind of had it, but Christian Bale's just more attractive, really.
And shout out to us for pushing George Clooney aside.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for talking about the most attractive people, George.
Yeah. I just wish... I don't have any controversial opinions. I don't have any out there casting theories. But what I will say is I just wish every Batman ever has Kevin Conroy's voice. That's all I...
Hands down.
That the question over who's the best Batman, if people have seen the animated series and played the Arkham games and watched Justice League, everyone will say Kevin Conroy.
Yeah.
If they haven't, they'll probably say Bale or Pattinson, probably. But Kevin Conroy is the prime example of a good Batman. Everything from his, you know, the line delivery is great. I mean, the way that they draw him is perfect as well. This kind of like... very minimalist silhouette, and there's not a load of gadgets on them. He's just got the belt. We've gotten so far away from that. I think Pattinson's brought back some level of a simplistic suit.
Which
I quite like. But we had like the Christian Bale in the Arkham games that really set the precedent of him being like almost like an Iron Man suit. Really.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't like when Batman relies too heavily on that. I like a detective Batman.
He's more stealth rather than, as you said, reliant on explosive gels. Yeah. He's got a batarang and that's it.
And a magnifying glass or something. Turns into Sherlock. But I think whoever they cast, I'd quite like it to be not an A-lister, which is why I quite like David Corrin's
work.
I don't need... This is kind of where Star Wars is... not let me down, but just Ryan Reynolds is the face of a new Star Wars movie.
Yeah. Do we need that?
Does the property need that?
Yeah,
I think is my thing. And Batman as a property does not need an A-lister in the role. So you know what? I'd be quite happy to see any, as long as they've got black hair. Because to me, Bruce Wayne has black hair. I don't know why. I just
the
kinda,
fundamental. Yeah. Most of the time, he wears a fucking cowl. You can't see it anyway.
This is true. But I would quite like a B-lister.
Yeah. And maybe flesh it out with the A-listers to get people in like a villain role.
Yeah.
I feel like, everyone wants like Giancarlo Esposito to play Mr. Freeze and that sort of stuff. I feel like you go in that sort of realm.
Yeah, that would be good. But I think Batman, the property sells itself.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see where it goes. Very excited to see where it goes. I'm excited for them to give us a good Nightwing.
Yeah.
I'd quite like them, if they do step away from Pattinson and it's its own thing, maybe Nightwing already exists and the Robin at the time is Damian or Tim. Maybe it's Tim Drake. And then, in the second Batman film, you do Under the Red Hood and Death in the Family, because that would be brilliant. That would be so good.
It's like the most iconic story.
It is so good. And I think James Gunn could be on board for something like that, because I love the quote of, I don't need to see Crime Alley. I don't need to see the spider bite Peter Parker. I don't need to see Krypton. Never been more right.
Yeah.
We have seen that story so many times, and if people don't get it, then why are you watching a Batman film?
This isn't for you. This is not made for you.
We don't need it. Have Nightwing established. Maybe give him his own series. Tim Drake's pretty cool. And then like two, three films in. The villain's the Red Hood. I wonder where this is going to go. God, it's Jason Todd.
Do like this.
Yeah. And then that plays up like a final bite. Tease Joker. And then movie 3. Joker's there.
Yeah.
And it's the Red Hood thing. Oh, that'd be so cool. It'd be so, so cool. But if you want that story now, the Death in the Family and Under the Red Hood animated movies are also really good. And John DiMaggio does a brilliant Joker. Really underrated Joker.
I watched, what was the one I did? Is it The Killing Joke? The animated one for that?
Yeah.
there was so much of that I enjoyed. There were some parts I was like, "What? Yeah. Why is Batman shagging
Batgirl?
Yeah, yeah. Why is this happening?"
I didn't get that either.
No. And I didn't like it's that. Also, it wasn't even like alluded to in the distance. It was like,
they're on a rooftop.
I've heard the Brazzers theme tune. Like, what's happening
something's
here?
Something's going on.
Okay. Oh my.
That was quite a controversial one of the animated films.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the DC animated canon, the universe is quite good. It's quite hard to keep continuity if you try and compare it to like the Justice League stuff and Young Justice and all of that. But no, the movies are quite good. Yeah. I quite like them.
And let's jump to the other side now, MCU.
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's your show, right? Yeah. Let's go there. Right, okay.
Yeah, there's no cool segues here. I'm trying, right now, fucking next question, let's go. Fantastic Four.
Mm.
How hyped are you feeling for this one in comparison?
I'm not as hyped as I was for Superman.
Oh.
In all honesty.
Okay, I'm the complete opposite.
Really? Yeah. Right, okay. For me, the Superman had the hype of, this is a completely new thing.
Yeah.
This is brand new. Very excited. Ooh, it's James Gunn. Oh, I like James Gunn. This is a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, the trailers look quite good. Ooh,
yeah.
I'm into this. And then the Fantastic Four trailers came out, and I was like, yeah, Thunderbolts was all right. okay, what have we got coming next? Oh, Fantastic Four and then Doomsday. Or do we get a Spider-Man film in the middle of that? I don't even know.
Yeah, that's what... The Marvel fatigue doesn't help.
Yeah, and then it was... the Fantastic Four trailer came out. This looks quite good.
Mm.
It looks quite good. I do not want to get my hopes up. That was my mindset.
Okay, fair.
I have every faith from the trailers and from what I've heard from people. I have every faith that it will be good.
Yeah.
However...
Ooh.
I simply don't think it will do enough to set up a Doomsday. There is no way. Nothing gets on my tits more than the "we are so back" nonsense. I cannot stand this saying. It does my head in. Being back means we are returning to a state that already existed, okay? Endgame had 10 years worth of build-up. 10 years! We had nearly 20 movies going up to that film. And sure, Iron Man 2 didn't lead directly into Endgame. But no, we were building team... Whatever film it was, we were building a team dynamic that was going to lead to that point. You know, Black Panther set up Wakanda, which appeared in Infinity War. Like, everything kind of slowly built up this team dynamic and this atmosphere that led to that point.
Yeah.
Just because it wasn't direct doesn't mean it wasn't leading to it. But you're genuinely telling me that every single nonsense show that we have had come out in the past 5 years is going to be leading to Doomsday. The world is in the same mindset that it was for Infinity War and Endgame as it is for Doomsday. Are you kidding? We have had a film setting up a new Avengers team made up of B-list or C-list Marvel. You're telling me that you're excited to see Ghost go up against Doctor Doom in Doomsday. We have had a film setting up an Avengers team and a Fantastic Four movie, which is full of new characters. And then we've got the biggest film in Marvel's catalogue, bringing back the only reason why they're bringing back all of these characters, I can guarantee you, is not from a story perspective. It's because if on the cover it said Ghost and Yelena Belova go up against Doctor Doom, you are not getting butts in seats. They've announced Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, all of these people purely to fill theatres. And I can almost guarantee you that they'll show up for like one or two scenes and then Doom will come along, kill their universes or throw them in the battle arena or whatever, and then we'll move on. Being, we are not back. We will never be back, and that's okay.
So my question was, are you excited for the Fantastic Four?
Ish.
Oh, Christ. I mean, you're so true. There is so much fan service in these things. I cannot stick the multiverse anymore.
I cannot
stick it.
But I can with the Spider-Verse stuff. I love all of that stuff. And I think they do it brilliantly because from the get-go, you're introduced, you get how it works, you understand the possibilities within having a multiverse. Mm. But it just hasn't been explored well enough throughout the whole MCU to, like, warrant
Our multiverses, apart from Multiverse of Madness, is them coming to us. And I'm like, well, I want to see other multiverses. I want to see different universes.
Also, Multiverse of Madness was 4 years ago at this. Yeah. Three, 4 years ago or something.
Yeah, it was the second like multiverse film after Homecoming. No Way Home, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yet again, we didn't see other universes in that.
You just saw them come to us and go, that's Andrew Garfield.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Oh, then we're going to send you back. So we're never going to see you again. Yeah. But just know that they are out there. They are out there.
We'll hint to them once every eight phases.
And also, the main multiverse universe that we saw in Multiverse... I said a lot of verses in
bloody
that.
Bloody hell, you smashed that.
The main universe that we saw in Multiverse of Madness is a universe that no longer really exists because Scarlet Witch killed all of them.
Well, yeah.
So, sorry, but the only universe that seemingly, like... it tangibly exists within the MCU is going to be what's in Fantastic Four.
Yeah. So, and now they're against Galactus, who does eat worlds for a living.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, if you saw Thunderbolts, you can almost like kind of already expect what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because the Fantastic Four have come to whatever universe the MCU is. It's not 616, it's 199999 or it's something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know, and then of course people are going to say, oh, but we know that the Fox universe is out there. We know that Deadpool and Wolverine, we know all these universes exist. But I'm like, yeah, but they're there.
Mm.
But you're telling me that you're going to go back and watch like Days of Future Past or like the Wolverine and tell me that it's building to a fight with Doctor Doom. Like, no, these are universes that just exist that haven't played into the main story. Oh, it does my head in.
I mean, they work side by side in Deadpool and Wolverine as a gag, as a bit, really. Yeah. So they can go, Fox is dead. That's why it's there. Yeah. Not to establish him. Yeah.
It just gets on my nerves, and I have no doubt that Doomsday is going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I'm just a cynical person in general. But I have lost quite a lot of faith with Marvel in the past few years. And it's gotten to the point where I think me and quite a lot of people just simply don't care anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. If I'm honest, when Thunderbolts would advertise, it did not blow me away because it felt like every Marvel thing coming out ever. This I'm excited for because I love the aesthetic of it.
Yeah.
And I love the trailers having this guy's hot stuff. And like, it feels sexy. Yeah. It feels fun. It feels...
Well, it feels Incredibles, really. Like,
yeah.
It does feel incredible. With the aesthetic. And I mean, the Incredibles basically are the Fantastic Four. But I do think visually it's going to stand out in the MCU, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
And there are elements that I'm excited for the Fantastic Four, almost as like a standalone movie. I think if I'm approaching it as a standalone movie, I'm more excited for it. But knowing that after this, we're going straight into Doomsday and then... what they call the one at Secret Wars.
Yeah. The threat doesn't feel real yet. And as you said, like, it doesn't feel like I know enough about, even like, you know, Yelena, who's been in two films, I still don't really feel like I know enough about her to
head up a team. She's not Steve Rogers. She doesn't have enough of an arc.
Yeah.
Like Steve Rogers had by Infinity War. And unless these characters that they're pushing, like Yelena or... I mean, who else is leading the MCU at the minute?
Like, well, I've seen a lot of stuff about Shang-Chi, but like that's...
We haven't heard from him in like 6 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the mind-blowing thing.
Yeah.
There's so much like, when are we getting sequel? When are we getting sequel? And like, well, we have to do it soon before Doomsday.
Personally, I think if they'd have built Shuri up a little bit in this like, interim between Wakanda Forever and now, I could see Shuri being a main kind of lead of a new team. But we've not heard from Wakanda for, since Wakanda Forever.
Yeah. And I'm also seeing stuff about Young Avengers, which I would blow my mind if that happens. If Hailee Steinfeld, Joe Locke, and all of that return,
they're gonna be 30 by the time they make that film.
Middle-aged Avengers.
I don't know. It's a very interesting place. I think, in all honesty, take a break, focus on your animated stuff because 97 was really good. Mm. And just have a bit of a reassess. I think the best thing I think they could do is after Secret Wars, start in a completely new universe and go with the X-Men.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, like, because I think if they do the Secret Wars thing, resets everything, whatever, I mean, they've set mutants for some reason with Miss Marvel, but how are you going to introduce the X-Men now into the MCU? It's like, too much has happened for them not to have appeared yet.
Especially when we're getting 15 of them returning Doomsday as well.
Yeah. I don't know. Where can the MCU go next? It's with the X-Men, and I reckon they'll do that in a new universe, I think.
Yeah.
All being well.
Also, I love that you're mopping your sweat now, because the mixture of the heat in here and that,
and me getting angry.
Yeah, have really, really.
Oh yeah, it's taking it out of me. It's really taking it out of me.
Do you want me to just say you really do look like Pete Davidson?
No, no.
You look so
stop,
good.
Stop. You look... No, not Pete Davidson. Please. Please. Pete Davidson pulls though, so I'll take that.
Yeah, and you will.
At some point.
You will.
At some point.
Yeah. I'm sure this will help.
Yeah.
Women love a guy that can have a twitching eye over the sort of Pedro Pascal with stretchy limbs. They love that stuff. They love it.
Yeah.
Now, this is also a question I ask on every episode of the podcast.
Hit me.
And I feel like it's right up your street.
Go on.
I'm giving you the chance to recreate a movie with an entire Muppets cast, but only one person in it is a human. What movie are you picking? Stroking of the chin?
Might need a minute. I'm going to give you two parts that sounds for.
Oh, wow.
I've thought about
this. This is a Doomsday Secret War.
It could be. The Italian Job.
If you gave me 500 quid to guess what you was going to say, that would not have been on there.
I think that would be brilliant.
Okay.
The Italian Job. We know Michael Caine can work with the Muppets.
Shut up. We're creating the cinematic universe.
We know Michael Caine can work with the Muppets. And also, The Italian Job is like a group heist movie.
Yeah.
And the Muppets are really good with like heist and capers and all this. The Great Muppet Caper is one of my favorite Muppet films. And Kermit and the gang are kind of like on the other side of that. But could you imagine like trying to rob the gold and driving the minis? Like, it would have so many funny moments, and I think it would just work perfectly. And also, you've still got Michael Caine being with the Muppets. You can then have the prison warden be like Waldorf and Statler.
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea. I'd love to see them. And then there's also so many opportunities. My favorite Muppet trope is when they get hit by a car, and you can clearly tell that someone's just like thrown the puppet.
Lobbed them, yeah.
And they're just going flailing.
Yeah.
There are so many opportunities for stuff like that, and I would love that. And I can see that final shot of them all in the back of the van and the gold at the end of the van, and then all of the Muppets just there waiting, lying on top of Michael Caine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the shot.
You know what's funny? I ask people this and they'll panic and go, I don't know, 50 Shades of Grey because it's funny. And then I can say stuff back. What you've done is actually create a cinematic masterpiece. I'm like, actually, that is quite a smart and wise answer. You win this round.
I've won that. And I'm going to give you another answer.
Okay.
I've thought about this long and hard, and this isn't a movie that already exists. This is for the Jim Henson family, okay? If you're listening, I've got you a multi-million dollar idea here, okay? Hear me out. I've said this before. This video, I said this online, and it did pretty well. The Muppets Fleetwood Mac biopic. Hear me out on this, okay? Music biopics do quite well. The Muppets, everybody loves the Muppets.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody loves Fleetwood Mac. Mm-hmm. Fleetwood Mac are kind of hot at the minute because Stevie Nicks and Silver Springs, and that's all over the place online. You do a Fleetwood Mac Muppets biopic, and you cast Miss Piggy as Stevie Nicks and Kermit the Frog as Lindsay Buckingham. You have a scenario where Miss Piggy is singing Silver Springs at Kermit the Frog. You listen to that song. You play that song right now, and you tell me that is not a Miss Piggy song. She'll follow you down till the sound of her voice will haunt you. You'll never get away from the sound of the woman that loves you. And then you just get Kermit's face staring back at her. Iconic. Iconic. You have Christy McVie as the only, like, person, because really she's like probably one of the only normal people. Animal as Mick Fleetwood because he's a drummer. John McVie can be, I don't know, like Gonzo or something. Like, it can be Gonzo, because Gonzo's like always quite like horny and he can try and get with Christy McVie. Fine, there we go, do that. It would be brilliant. I'm telling you, it's a multi-million-dollar idea. I don't know why the hell nobody's ever done it. And also, I don't know why there isn't a Fleetwood Mac biopic, because that story is insane.
I mean, Dr. Teeth and Janice and those guys must be fucking fuming at you for not picking them to play Fleetwood Mac, as they are literally the Muppets band.
This is true, but I'm not a massive Mr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem fan. Dr. Teeth? Yeah, Dr. Teeth.
Why not?
I like them. They're fine. I haven't watched that TV show that they did with...
Don't worry, no one did.
No. I haven't watched that, and I don't know, whenever we get to the church bit in Muppet 78, is it 78, the first Muppet movie?
Yeah.
Something like that. When we get to that bit, we get to the church and we introduce the Electric Mayhem, I'm always like, oh. But they do sing a really good song while they're painting the car, which is quite cool. And they also don't have a big role in Muppets 2011, and Muppets 2011 is my favourite. Also, they're not in the Muppets Christmas Carol.
No, well, it's hard to fit a rock band.
Well, I mean, you say that. You fit, like, Boomerang Fish and
yeah, you're
Talking
right.
Bears.
Scrooge's entire workforce is rats and frogs.
This is true. I mean,
so,
come on, Daniel, really.
What a stupid idiot I am. It's what Charles Dickens would have wanted. And sadly, I've just took the time. We don't have that much longer left.
Yeah.
So I'm now going to play an interview I did with Pom Clementieff and Vanessa Kirby.
Yes.
Full circle moment here for
We're back there.
Fantastic Four. So I'm going to play that now. You just get to sit in this boiling hot studio and just listen to me have my moment.
Do it. Go.
Hello.
Hello. How are you two doing?
I tell you what, it's really nice to be in England, being with my natives.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Do you want me
it's
to really
familiar.
Up the Englishness as well?
Yeah, I guess.
If I have like a cup of tea and a monocle or something.
Yeah, I know. Well,
we
are walking cliches in many ways. Look, I've
I'll
got
go
mine
full.
Here, but this is a matcha, so it's not quite the same thing. But
I'll go full Downtown Abbey. Downtown Abbey, I mean.
Downtown.
Downtown Abbey.
Can you do pretty?
Let me give it a go.
Is that British?
How
yes.
I don't know.
It's very Downtown Abbey.
Yeah, the knees, no.
Oh, no.
My knees crack too. They make so much noise. It's horrible. It's like popcorn.
You're like an action star. At least I've got an excuse.
Yeah, but
she
that's
just
why.
Too many high kicks. That's the thing. She's
oh
like,
yeah, that's
she's
my excuse. I'm always
high
kicking. But guys, let's chat Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning. I mean, Vanessa, this is your second of three Mission Impossible films that you're going to star in. So you must have some incredible wild memories of being a part of this.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And it started. When did I get the job? 2015 or 16? I just finished series one of a show called The Crown, and I left that set. I travelled on the train, the last train out to Paris, and then was filming at 7 in the morning the next day, and I was just, it was the wildest experience I've ever had.
Pom, when I say this, I'm not exaggerating, but after seeing you in this, I kind of want you to be my best friend. Like, I want you to
oh
be
my
best
god,
friend.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah,
such,
this
real... Such a violent best friend.
Oh yeah, but it's still so much better than my other best friends. Like, if they're watching this, sorry, but like, you're just the best. And the fact that you managed to take on Tom Cruise is chef's kiss. Like, it's so cool, that whole fight sequence. But these stunts can be dangerous. Like, has one ever gone wrong and you've accidentally like punched Tom Cruise in the face?
No. but that was one of my thoughts, but I had to stay positive and to convince myself that I wouldn't do that. So, you know, like fighting, it's a lot of training, but it's also a lot of like what is in your mind, you know? So if before going to bed, I would just like visualize the scene and go through the movements and be like super positive, you know? And it went really well, you know, like he's incredible at what he does. He's so incredible at action and all the fight stuff. But also I had a lot of time to train and you know, I'm precise, and you work on the distance to make sure that you stop before actually hitting the person. And it's all about the camera angle and how to sell the move and how to sell getting hit and all these things, you know?
That's why I want you as my best friend. None of my friends have ever come close to punching Tom Cruise, so that's such a good story. And Vanessa, of course, Hayley. You must know her pretty well. I've just spoke to her, and I think she's the loveliest human I've ever met in my whole life. Like, I learned so much about her. She's a ventriloquist. I've learned that she can do magic. She was in a Pringles advert. But you must know some more about her. Is there anything that you know about her that would just blow my mind?
Blow the mind. I mean, not that I could say in camera for her, on her behalf. No, but I completely agree with you. And we, in COVID, we lived near to each other. And our trainer, Sam Eastwood, who's amazing, lived also in South London. And we would go on these long training runs. It was literally the only thing that we, in our day, like, was our one activity we were allowed to do, is go on a run, and we'd go together. And so we bonded so much. We became like sisters, you know, because we were in a really weird time. So mm-hmm. we went through so many ups and downs. There were tears, random, you know, outbursts of mad laughter in the middle of, you know, it was really bonding.
Finally, I'm being told I've got to wrap, but Pom, I just want to ask you one thing. I mean, after seeing this, you in this, I kind of want you to be cast in everything, including,
oh, thank you.
including my boy, James Gunn's DC.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
I'm sure you two have had conversations about this, but are there any mm-hmm. characters that you would just love to get your hands on?
I'm not going to tell you which character. No, we've been talking about it, and there's like one specific character that he's thinking of, and I think it would be really, really awesome. It would like continue like doing action too, so it's exciting.
And there you go. I assume you loved every single second of that.
And what wonderful, wonderful ladies.
Yeah.
Wonderful ladies.
And a wonderful
Clement Eves in Fantastic Four.
No, this was from years ago from Mission Impossible.
Oh, of course.
Which you heard because we definitely listened to this interview and we didn't edit
it
in post.
What a wonderful Mission Impossible interview that was. They're wonderful ladies, and what an even wonderfuler interviewer.
That's
oh God, I've been interviewed by him as well.
Stop it. And I can see what Jonathan Bailey sees in you.
No, stop. It's the eyes.
He's not just the eyes,
my
friend.
Stop.
The eyes are not up there.
I'll show you later.
There we go.